This is Coach Lee, and you're listening to The Door Report.
At Vanderbilt, it's Tim Corbin and the Vandy Boys, Jerry Stackhouse on the hardwood, and Clark Lee on the gridiron. Nashville, it's time to sit back, relax, grab a cold one, and enjoy the show. The Music City is our state, and West End is where we rock. You're listening to The Door Report, the premier Vanderbilt podcast for fans who bleed black and gold. Commodore Nation, anchor down.
Welcome back into The Door Report, episode 229, on a lovely Friday evening here, August 4th, 2023. 22 days, Trevor. 22 days away from kickoff. It's inching closer and closer and closer. I tweeted it. I said it on an Iowa local radio show that I was interviewed by on Monday during my lunch break at work. Mm-hmm. Our national nightmare is almost over. And we saw a few highlights out of fall camp as well. So on episode 229, we have a locked and loaded episode today. First episode me and Trevor are ever doing in person, video side by side. This is going to be a treat for everyone. We will have it released on YouTube. We're going to start doing that consistently, but we have the offensive preview, offensive breakdown for the 2023 season. Clark Lee, team three, year three. Will Shepard been putting up some highlights during fall camp. Some Tennessee Titans scouts were out to see him during fall camp. And then we have some interesting comments from former Commodore running back Ray Davis. Kentucky transfer had some interesting things to say about his new home in Lexington. But, Trevor, that's not the main news of this podcast. The main news of this podcast is we have some exciting new features for TDR listeners, including some mics that Trevor Hulin paid for out of his own pocket, hopefully increasing the quality of audio coming through your speakers at home. But, Trevor, thank you for that, and I'm very excited to see how this actually ends up looking and turns out, because we spent a couple hours kind of finessing this, trying to make it look as professional as possible.
Yes, we did. And like you said, this is our first pod together in person. You and Billy did an in-person pod after the Kentucky win.
That's right.
I was not in attendance yet. I was on the pod. That was my first week on the pod.
Oh.
But I was not there for the in-person. So this is our first time doing an in-person pod. So, dude, This does not feel real. As you can, oh my gosh, no, we can't. We're going to have to blur that out.
No, we have a tablecloth.
We have a tablecloth we bought at Target for $3.75.
We did. We just bought it. As you can see, we have a lovely array of Vanderbilt memorabilia. We still have the Star V helmets. We have not gotten a hold of what I like to call the Strong V. I will not call it the Power V. We also have, you can see this on video, little Jerry Stackhouse bobblehead, along with Kyle Wright, Vandy Boys legend.
One controversial bobblehead. One less controversial bobblehead than Kyle Wright.
This Jerry Stackhouse bobblehead right here, he might not make it through basketball season.
This is a football episode.
You pay attention to this bobblehead. He might not be here come February, so keep watching him.
That's going to be very telling about if we're still on the Weeback Stack train about halfway through the season, if that bobblehead is still in the background. But, Trevor, before we get into breaking news and much more, don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Door Report. New handle, no spaces, no underscores, at The Door Report on Instagram and Twitter. Give us a follow. We're trying to grow that Instagram account right now. So if you follow us on Twitter, give us a follow on Instagram. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And while you're at it, give our podcast 5 stars and a review on iTunes or Spotify. It's now time, Trevor, for breaking news.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I know the beef of this episode, Trevor, is the offensive preview. And I'm very excited to get into it. That's going to be a majority of it. But before we get into that, there were some comments made by a running back that some Vanderbilt fans may remember. I really wish I had the full quote pulled up in front of me. I'm working on getting it pulled up right now. But it, along the lines of, he loves his new home in Lexington, Kentucky. Lexington is so much more low-key than Nashville. And one of the best parts is that all the people around town are asking about Kentucky and Kentucky football. You know, at his old home in Nashville, it was more about Jason Aldean's and Kid Rock's. That was the gist of the quote. I'm not misquoting him or misrepresenting what he was saying. I don't even think that it was shade. I was about to say, I don't even think he realized that it was going to be perceived as much shade as it was. It was intentional. Ray Davis is a smart guy. He's 24 years old. We discussed this before the podcast. There were some people getting upset at Vanderbilt faithful for maybe not attacking, because that's a little bit too harsh for all the stuff that I saw. No, the term attacking is really thrown around, but, you know, giving some critical comments on what they heard from Ray Davis. And I think it was Nash Vegas on Twitter responded back and said, he's an NIL employee. He's 24 years old. He's not a college kid. And that is another reason that I think we can kind of discuss these comments a little more and be like, dude, was that really the smartest and most intelligent thing to do? You're not a college kid. You can't blame it on youth. You should be going into your second or third year for your employer after college. He's 24.
He's
on his third school. Exactly. And those comments do nothing but fuel the fire of a Vanderbilt Commodores football team that already beat Kentucky last year. And now you've transferred to Kentucky to reap what you sow.
I mean, we own them in everything. And here's the thing too that bothers me so much. And we talked about this on our way to Target, where we went to buy this lovely tablecloth for $3 and some change. Here's another thing that bothers me about it is you're like, okay, yeah, it's more low key. Yeah, it's low key because Lexington sucks. Like nobody enjoys going to Lexington. Nobody plans to go to Lexington. It's either a business trip, you're seeing family, or you're going to Kentucky. Nobody just goes there for a bachelorette party, which, number one. And here's the thing, too, that bothers me about it is whenever a guy transfers, especially to an in-conference team, it's easy to want to hate on him because they're transferring to an in-conference team, especially in division. Nobody felt that way about Ray Davis. And here's the thing. He transferred to Kentucky, and people were actually like, oh, this is Vanderbilt's fault that they could not get him into grad school. They couldn't bend the rules to bring back your most productive offensive player. People were defending Ray Davis, and now he goes on this, which – somebody was like, don't get too upset about it. But like, dude, he knew what he was doing. Like we're not dumb. He's not dumb. Like we understand what the guy was doing. He wanted to get a reaction, and congratulations, bro. You got a reaction. And so I don't want to hear any whining and moaning from people whenever they're like, oh, well, you're being too harsh on the kid. Well, no, not really. He's not a kid. He's almost off of his parents' insurance at this point. And Vanderbilt fans are finally acting like an SEC fan base to where you want to dog the school that gave you an opportunity, talking about, oh, people just go there for talk about Jason Aldean's and
Kid Rock.
Kid Rock. Who, I mean, dude, come on. This just is so frustrating. Like, let's just call it what it is. You wanted to come back to Vanderbilt, so don't act like this is a better scenario for you. Like, this is your plan B, so don't act like this. And a player in particular made an interesting tweet about the situation. if we someone will you boo Ray Davis?
That's a good question.
I will 110% boo the hell out of him.
I'll boo him.
Absolutely. And you know what? Here's the
thing. I think he wants to hear the boos, though. That's the only thing that gives me hesitance.
See, I'm not sure if he's got that dog in him to where he's like, no, boo me. You know what I'm saying? Because he was on Twitter all the time after Vanderbilt games being like screenshotting DMs that fans, quote unquote fans, would send him saying, like, you need to run harder. You need to break a big run. And he's like, this is the type of response I get after a big game. He's not built like that. Yeah, I don't think he might act like he wants the booze, but he's not built like that. He's not one of those guys.
Well, CJ Taylor was the player you were referring to that had a tweet in response, and he said, in quote from CJ Taylor, you can follow him on Twitter at CSEEJJAY2K1. He said, people love to troll. Better be ready to step. That was the widest possible way I could say that tweet.
Yeah.
And then he said, hashtag all football. So that Kentucky game just keeps ticking closer and closer. And I think that one keeps getting circled and highlighted more and more on the Vanderbilt football calendar for fans.
He might kill
him.
CJ Taylor might kill Ray Davis.
The crazier part to me is Ray Davis transferred to the only other SEC program that might have as small of a football following as Vanderbilt. And like, I'm not trying, we are a Vanderbilt podcast, but we are very self-aware. It's like, are people coming up to you and recognizing you in Lexington?
No way in hell.
My entire life, Kentucky is not given one flying shit about football. They were kind of our brethren in the fact of like, just wait until basketball season.
Yes.
And now Ray Davis all of a sudden is throwing shade as if Kentucky fans are more engaged in football than Vanderbilt fans. You know why that maybe people in Nashville are a little more hung up on whatever going out doing things? Because there are other things to do, Ray. There are other things to do in Nashville, Tennessee. In Lexington, you have Kentucky. You have the Phi Gamma Delta International Headquarters. And racetracks. And a bunch of boring BS farmland. So there you go, Ray. Congratulations. You're in Lexington, the second biggest city in the SEC. It's still a load of crap, pile of garbage. Have fun where you're at.
Is it really the second biggest city?
Second largest city for population.
Really?
SEC. Yep. That was
that
last time I checked.
That is a shocking statistic.
You might want to fact check me on that, but we don't have a producer. But if we had a producer, I would be telling him to look it up and make sure I'm right
that
now.
That is an absolutely fascinating statistic.
I was pretty into that for a second because I don't think people have an idea of like how much bigger of a metropolis Vanderbilt is located inside of.
City in America.
What they're competing against as a college athletics program is a whole different set of circumstances than every other SEC and most other major college programs, because most other major college programs outside of like Georgia Tech are located in complete college towns, cities that are literally nothing but old, short, fat people and college students, like Knoxville. That's pretty much, it's poor, old, short, fat people. And that's pretty much what every SEC city is. Go to Arkansas. Go to Fayetteville. Let me know what you find. Ooh. All right.
Tuscaloosa. Tuscaloosa. That place sucks.
Go to Tuscaloosa. Go to Starkville. Let's see what you find in Starkville, Mississippi.
Shout out to Miller McKee, Mississippi State alumni. I hate Mississippi State, so.
Next topic. Moving on to the next topic, Will Shepard. This will be a nice transition into the offensive preview here. Had a couple videos posted, one in particular making a one-handed catch on a spectacular play in the corner of the end zone. And also I saw a few tweets, Trevor, about some Tennessee Titans scouts being out to see Will Shepard. I believe it was Robbie that put that tweet out. Robbie Weinstein, friend of the pod. Hashtag thanks, Robbie.
Hashtag thanks, Robbie.
So we all know Will Shepard's going to do great things, but I have a question that's a little more interesting. He's inevitably going, Will Shepard, senior. I believe he has 1 year of COVID eligibility technically left, but
which is crazy.
Neither of us expect him to use that eligibility. Yeah. We both think he'll be in the draft next year. Where do you think Will Shepard could land in the draft, the 2024 NFL draft?
It's a tough question.
So here's the thing. I and I know this is a big recruiting tool that a lot of the perennial powerhouses use, is that, oh, well, you could get a ton of NFL exposure if you come to the school, which that is true. If you go to Alabama's, if you go to your Georgia's, if you go to your Penn State's, you are going to get more NFL exposure. That, I mean, that is what it is. But the notion that Will Shepard isn't going to get that sort of exposure, that sort of look, because he goes to a school like Vanderbilt, which is still an SEC school, a Power Five school, I think is bogus. NFL scouts have shown draft after draft, year after year, that you could literally be playing on a small island off the Pacific coast, and if you can play ball, they're going to find you. So I don't think he's going to go under the radar necessarily because he plays for Vanderbilt. Now, where he was falling in the draft. So the only barometer that we have as of recently was Jordan Matthews. Jordan Matthews was, he was like, what, the first pick in the second round? He was very close. He was very close was to second. Being a first round.
I know he's the second round.
Very round close pick. To being a first round draft pick. And for a while in time, statistically speaking, Jordan Matthews was the best wide receiver in the SEC whenever it came to receptions, yards, touchdowns. He was legitimately the best. I think we had a little bit
round of round two pick 10.
Oh, pick 10. Eagles. Oh, yeah. So I was close. Go Birds. So here's the thing with Will Shepard. I think he is more gifted than Jordan Matthews naturally. I'm not sure you can argue against that. Just his physical traits, he's more gifted than Jordan Matthews. He's faster. His catch radius is insane. His route running is awesome. He's faster than J-Matt, like you said. So I think he could be a top three guy.
How he plays this year for me, I'll give you my answer. That's a tough question because he has his biggest season in his career is this upcoming season. I think he can play himself into a second round pick. I think the worst case, if he kind of falls off the face of the earth, I think he'll be a fourth, fifth round pick. I think that's his basement, and I think that's his ceiling because he is faster than J-Matt. That was J-Matt's issue.
That's his big issue.
It was speed. That's why he was not a first round draft pick. Yeah. He was a long strider, and then he didn't run a great 40. I don't remember. I think it was like a 4.6 or something, a 4.63, somewhere in there. I do think that straight line speed, Will Shepard, that's going to prevent him from being a first round pick. I don't think he's going to be a 4.3 guy. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But unless you're a 4.3, low 4.4 guy, you're not going to be a first round receiver, more than likely, unless you're an absolute freak, 6.4, 6.5, which also he's not. Naturally gifted side, I do think he's like a low fives, high fours guy, potentially, with all that. The natural ability you're talking are just the natural soft hands, easy catching, and then fluidity of routes. How he runs his routes is a lot more natural than Jordan Matthews. He's able to run the more complex routes that they're going to want to see in the NFL. The footwork's a little bit better. J-Matt was a lot more of a wide receiver screen, make one guy miss down the sideline, running post, running go routes. So I think Will Shepard is undeniably the most talented receiver in Vanderbilt history. Now, where you rank him in the greatest of Vanderbilt receivers, that's going to be the tougher conversation. But I think it's kind of one of those things, objectively sit back, really take a macro look. Will Shepard's the most talented receiver that Vanderbilt football has ever had. And that's no shade whatsoever at Earl Bennett or Jordan Matthews.
I'll ask you this. Okay. Hypothetically speaking, let's say Will Shepard this year has 1,200 receiving yards, 10 touchdowns. Where does he go?
I think he's really similar to J-Matt. I think he's an early second-round pick. I don't see him be I just think the NFL has shifted so much more to pure speed in the Tyreek Hill, not that mold, but just speed. Mm-hmm. Kill speed is valuable, and more and more of those ticks.
Jalen Hyatt got drafted.
Yeah, that's the only reason. There's no other reason. I mean, I think he should be able to play himself and do a first round pick. I think even if he puts up those stats that the mocks are going to come back, he's going to run his 40, he's going to do the drills. They're going to say he looked fantastic, but the straight line speed is a little bit of a question. It's not saying he's not going to be a successful receiver, but there's only 32 first round picks. And a lot of those, you have to be a top 3-4 receiver in the entire country to do that. And not just a top 3-4 receiver in the country, a top 3-4 wide receiver prospect, which at the end of the day is a little bit different. Now, he does have a little bit of social media following, Dez Bryant tweeting about him a little bit, but I'm sure we will hit on Will Shepard quite a bit in this 2023 offensive preview. So let's go ahead and get into the beef of this episode, Trevor. Before we do, we're going to have a little bit of an ad break here.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, now into the offensive preview. We're going to include special teams alongside the defense, so we'll get to kicker and punter. Kicker, my God, that is going to be a real struggle this year, Vanderbilt fans. Little preview, my God. But
yeah,
we're going to include long snapper, friend of the pod, Wesley Schelling, in that defensive special teams combined preview. But first up, offense, position number one, quarterback.
Yeah, there's no question who the starting quarterback is.
We know who it is. AJ Swan's the guy. True sophomore. You saw him in limited action last year. Mike Wright, also you saw about half the reps last year. Transferred to Mississippi State. Obviously, very, 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 very different quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And that was another part of this quarterback breakdown. So I'm just going to run through all the guys on the roster. Each time that I go through these, let me actually not do that right now because I can't find the Vanderbilt football roster, even though I swear I pulled it up. But we can run through them in my head. You have Drew Dickey, Walter Taylor, AJ Swan, Ken Seals, and there's one more.
There's two more. There's two.
Two more.
There's two walk on or PWOs. With that being said, sorry guys, if you're listening,
we're going to try to name off. We're going to try to name off all of these each time. We'll see how it goes.
Now, the only ones you need to know are the big four: Swan, Seals.
But I want to get him some name drops. All right, Brennan Storer and Hayden Moses. All right, so don't worry about any of the others. Drew Dickey and Walter Taylor, barely worry about them. If you see them on the field in meaningful snaps, something has gone horribly, horribly, horribly wrong.
Or really this season. And Vanderbilt's up by like a trillion.
I said meaningful snaps. If you say in meaningful snaps, something has gone really, really bad. And just go ahead and jump off the top of First Bank Stadium if you see Walter Taylor or Drew Dickey in meaningful game snaps.
Yeah, if you see those guys in meaningful game snaps, then we're at DEFCON 5. Like you said, something has gone terribly wrong. And I would think that we're back to Derek Mason level football.
Now, Walter Taylor is a pretty interesting project.
I'm gonna talk about him.
I don't know. Yeah, before we get into the real guys that actually matter in this breakdown, and this is the deep dive, so it's gonna be beefy.
Yeah,
we can talk about all these guys. This is the point of this episode. But Walter Taylor, we went to the spring game. Yeah. He looked pretty damn good in the spring game. We were talking so much SHIT about him.
I was in particular
before, and then he dropped the most beautiful pass of the entire spring game on a bomb touchdown to a walk-on wide receiver. I think it was, I could be so wrong, like number 83 or something like that. Like maybe. London Humphreys, maybe it could have been.
83
but
is Kamarion Carter.
No, it's not. He's 17 now. Yeah, we'll get to that in the wide receivers. But he's a guy that he's in the same class as AJ. I don't think he's ever going to see the field.
No.
But he's 6'7", 235, and he is a cannon of an arm, and he's a lefty.
He's a project.
And it's really interesting to see a guy at 6'7" with decent mobility. He looks okay. For a dude that's 6'7" in the pocket, he looks okay. Doesn't look great. And he has a cannon of an arm, and he's left-handed. It's so weird seeing a 6'7" quarterback throw the football left-handed.
Yeah, well, we saw a 6'7" quarterback throw right-handed in Steven Rivers.
We saw him fumble on a kneel down. And
shout out to Steven Rivers. I wonder what that guy's doing with his life right now. Honestly, I don't care. I hate that
helping
guy.
helping raise Philip Rivers' 37 children. What do you mean? He's being a good uncle.
Okay, but I will say, so we had before the spring game, so Vanderbilt held two open scrimmages the two Saturdays before the spring game. I went to both of them, and I told Will and Billy at the time, Walter Taylor is not good. I said that to them. He had two really, really bad spring practices, and I stand by that. If you can ask, if you're on the boards, you can look at what Robbie said. You can look at whoever. He did not look good. And then for some reason, he comes out in the black and gold game and looks like a bigger Cam Newton. It was with a better arm. It was the strangest thing ever. And I felt like an idiot because I told these people who weren't there, hey, this kid is not good. And then he just comes out and for some reason turns it on. And there are and here's why I want to talk about him. I see a lot of people on the internet, and maybe this shouldn't bother me as much as it does. I see a lot of people on Twitter and message boards being like, oh, well, will we see Walter Taylor this year? Guys, he's probably going to be the fourth string guy. I don't think he's going to beat out Drew Dickey. He's a project, yeah. From a physical standpoint, he's ideal. I don't know if ideal, but he definitely raises some eyebrows. I'll also stand on this. You know what? I'm going to give a hot take, and of course, we'll get to tight ends in a moment, but we're talking about quarterbacks. If I'm Clark Lee, dude, bite the bullet and move that kid to tight end. That's not a shot in his quarterback abilities. That's just saying how absolutely thin we are. Brother, we just got to do it.
There are a couple other positions that I might hit on. We could move to tight end as well, and I think old Cameron Johnson could contribute there at that tight end position, even though he is a true freshman. But we have one other guy to get to. Number five, AJ Swan. Look at that. If you're watching on video, look at that beautiful handwriting. I wanted to erase it, but I have nothing to erase it with because we forgot to get paper towels. AJ Swan.
The next Jay Cutler, you think? Too soon?
I don't want to say no. But
I'm right there with when you.
So I actually was looking up old articles on thedoorreport.com. Shameless plug, go check it out. It is the Door Report's podcast you're listening to right now, so go check it out. But I actually went through and broke down the class that AJ Swan was in and comped the quarterbacks, and it was Drew Dickey and AJ Swan. I don't remember who I put for Drew Dickey. I basically said you'll never see Drew Dickey on the field. But AJ Swan, I said I want to say Jay Cutler so badly, but I'm not going to. I'm going to put his comp as Jordan Rodgers. And I really do think that comp is relatively decent, but I want to say it's a mixture of Jordan Rodgers and Jay Cutler. I know people want to say Jay Cutler, but it is unfair to put that comparison on AJ Swan. However, that being said, I know we love that phrase on this podcast. That being said, everything you hear out of camp is exactly what you would expect to hear out of camp in 2023 Jay Cutler. He's got a little bit of the body fat, a little bit of the baby face going on. For every one horrible throw he makes, which he makes plenty, he makes two that are the absolute most amazing plays of practice. Uh-huh. It's everything that you want out of a gunslinger quarterback. But everybody temper your expectations just a little bit. I know this might not be your opinion, Trevor. Freshman year to sophomore year for quarterbacks is not usually the big jump year. I know in the NFL, first year to second year is the proving ground year, the make or break. Like, this is when you see the big jump or the big fall off. In college, in my limited experience, I don't have data, it's the sophomore to junior year. That freshman to sophomore year a lot of times is a tough jump up.
Sophomore slump.
Yeah, being the day-in, day-out starter versus just being able to come in. And he did have incredible numbers. I've got his stats pulled up here for AJ. 1 second. AJ Swan last year was 115 of 198 for 1,274 yards, 10 touchdowns, and two picks. That's pretty good stats.
Yeah.
He played in 9 games, but being the guy having the opponent completely ready to game plan for your tendencies, he has enough on film now where coaches are going to have something to look at. It's not just a complete shot in the dark of guessing what they're going to do. They don't have to prepare for a running quarterback and Mike Wright at all. There could be some games that he comes out, and there will be some games, in my opinion, that he comes out and looks phenomenal and looks like a star, looks like the second coming of Jay Cutler, and there are going to be games that he looks like freshman year Kyle Shermer, and he looks like a deer in the headlights, and that is just what you have to deal with when you have a true sophomore coming in and becoming the guy. Now, the talented receiving core is going to help that a little bit, but I would temper the expectations just a little bit for AJ Swan during his sophomore year. That doesn't mean I don't expect him to have a good year.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, too, whenever you talk about tempering the expectations, I know we joke and we were like, oh, the Jay Cutler comp. I don't think anybody in their right mind is actually expecting him to come out there and put up Jay Cutler numbers. But the reason there's such high expectations for him is because in the games he played, you saw real flashes of a talented quarterback that Vanderbilt has not seen in a really, really long time. I know you did the comp to Jordan Rodgers. Right now, his arm is triple what Jordan Rodgers was. He has – Jordan Rodgers only wishes he has A.J. Swan's arm.
And I will defend myself that I was watching huddle highlights making that comp.
Yes, that is true. But too, I think for Vanderbilt fans, it's okay. Be absolutely ecstatic about this kid. Have high expectations. I have high expectations for him. I don't think he's going to come out, and I don't think he's going to win. I don't think he's going to be, statistically speaking, the best quarterback in the SEC. But probably in that 7-9 range, I think that's a totally fair expectation to have for him. And if your sophomore quarterback at Vanderbilt is in that 7-9 quarterback range right now, then you have something to really, really look forward to in him. And I think I really do think the world of him. And I think, even like you said, there are going to be games to where he does make dumb mistakes. That's just a learning curve. And I know it's so easy right now to say on a podcast whenever we haven't watched football that, oh yeah, it's just a learning curve. It just happens with young quarterbacks, as opposed to whenever you're in the stands and you watch it happen, you're like, oh my God, what the hell were you thinking?
Well, I always like to remind people that Kyle Shurmur, going into his junior year, did not have the job locked up
completely.
In Vanderbilt fans' minds. And now he's the all-time passing yards leader in Vanderbilt history. So that is all I'm saying, is not that I don't expect him to take a big jump. I don't expect him to look good, but just if he does come out and struggle, it's not going to be me yelling to pull the plug.
Yes.
This is going to be his year, like how Ken Seals had the year when Vanderbilt went 0-9 in the SEC, to learn and grow. And if it works out, it works out. That's what you have to do with quarterback, because there's nothing that replicates those in-game reps. And there's something to be said about the offense from day one, all the way from beginning of spring practice to now, being built around the same style of quarterback and not having two different type of offenses having to be implemented, a read option style blocking scheme and a traditional passing and running offense blocking scheme. That cannot be discounted. Is this team knows their identity on offense from day one, from the moment last season ended to the beginning of this team three. They have known what they have at quarterback.
Absolutely.
Even if it wasn't AJ Swan, you're still running pretty much the same scheme with Ken Seals or Drew Dickey or Walter Taylor. So that's the part that's different, is you don't have a guy like Mike Wright. This is not any hate on Mike Wright. I think that was probably the most like, yeah, man, thank you for everything. And he was like, thank you guys for everything. I'm going to go transfer.
Yeah.
Like, he was too talented to not have on the field in some way, but that was just not the direction that Clark Lee wanted to move that offense. He didn't want to have it split like that. And now you're going to see what this offense can do with a traditional pocket passing, pocket style quarterback in there.
Well, and two, I think with Kyle Shurmur, I think Kyle, God love him. I have nothing. That's exactly what I was going to say. Brother was a statue in the pocket. And is AJ Swan the most mobile? No, he's not a Mike Wright, but I don't think he has to be. If he can just shift and kind of manage to find the open spots in the pocket. Also, too, with his concussion history, I don't want them to run the kid at all. Honestly, if I see designed run plays with AJ Swan, I'll become hostile in Section F.
Now, the only other guy that I want to hit on any more in depth in this depth chart is Ken Seals, because he's going to be the backup this year. He is an underrated guy on this roster, because AJ Swan, you mentioned the concussion history. That's why it popped it back up in my mind. Your backup quarterback is probably going to see action. And it is, it just because of having to be out, helmet comes off, he has to come out for a play. He gets knocked out for a quarter. Yeah. I'm not saying because of substitutions. I'm saying because of injury. And I'm just a realist. And he's probably not going to play every single snap of all 12 games. And there is something invaluable about having a guy in Ken Seals with real game experience. And he can come into the game in that backup role, whether it's one or two plays, one or two series, one or two quarters. Mm-hmm. And you don't just feel like, well, now we just have to hand the ball off and punt every single time and pray we can get our starter back in. There's like, okay, we can basically just run the same offense now.
Yeah.
And if he comes out and slings picks, then even the fan base is going to understand this guy's seen action. We've seen him play. Like, we expect him to come out and not look like a deer in the headlights like 95% of college backups do.
Did Ken get a snap last year?
No.
Okay, I was wondering that. And to, I'm glad you brought up Ken Seals, because I think what Ken, even though Ken Seals is not going to be the starter, and listen, I hope to God AJ Swan is 100% healthy all season long. Head injuries are just so, and to, I don't want to, I hate when people say, oh, AJ Swan might be injury prone. This is not a soft tissue. This is not a wrist thing. Head injuries are the great equalizer to where there's nothing you can do to prevent them. They come for everybody. They don't discriminate. I hate when people say that about him. It really bothers me. But I think what Ken Seals brings to this team is very invaluable, in that you have a guy, like you said, who has meaningful snaps, meaningful throws against SEC teams, who can sort of be that, almost that savvy veteran that NFL teams like to bring in sometimes to coach and uplift their young quarterbacks, and sort of be like, hey, you missed this on this play. I'm going to bring you over. We're going to look at the iPad. This is what you should have been looking at. And I think that's worth its weight in gold.
Well, you're comparing that your backup is going to be either Ken Seals, who's a senior who played the entire all-SEC COVID season, mm-hmm. and was the backup the next year after that, to without him, if AJ Swan's out for a series, then your backup is Drew Dickey or Walter Taylor.
Yeah.
So that's a big difference, is a former four-star guy that has like 9-10 starts under his belt, mm-hmm. versus Drew Dickey or Walter Taylor as sophomores with absolutely no in-game real playing experience.
That's a great point.
And also, shout out Ken Seals, great guy. All-time dude. Shout out Robert Seals, his dad. Hope he's recovering and doing better. He was sick. Don't want to get into that. Yeah. But shout out Robert Seals. Shout out Ken Seals, friends of the pod.
You will never hear a negative word out of our mouths about Ken Seals. In fact, he'll probably grad transfer after this year. This podcast will be the biggest Ken Seals fan podcast wherever he goes. And every Vanderbilt fan should legitimately feel the same way. If Ken Seals transfers and that team that he has, that he goes to, has like an NIL program to where I can get like a custom Ken Seals jersey or t-shirt, I will.
There's something about seeing a guy that was a four-star, was ridiculously good in Texas high school football as a quarterback, and has kind of had the realization, this is not any slight, but he's not an NFL quarterback. He's had that realization, he's not an NFL guy, and he's like, I can make more of a meaningful difference here. Not personal glory, mm-hmm. but more of a meaningful difference in this program. He's comfortable at home under the Clark Lee staff that didn't even bring him into the program, which is even crazier that he's staying committed to this program in the modern NIL transfer galore free agent era. He's staying loyal to the coaching staff that didn't even bring him in. So that's a guy that Vanderbilt fans should deeply appreciate. And I know I said the thing about never getting jerseys of anyone younger than you. If there's a guy I would get a jersey for, it's Ken Seals.
I love to hear that.
Ken Seals is the dog.
He's
a dog. But we spent a lot of time on quarterbacks, and we have a lot of other more controversial positions to get to here, Trevor.
Isn't it crazy that quarterback is probably the least controversial position, maybe on the entire roster? I think it is.
I would say number one's wide receiver, least controversial. It's so one, two, three.
You're right. Yeah.
But that's not the next position up on this list. Next up, we have running back, one of the more controversial positions on this roster. So I'm going to go ahead and run through the guys in no particular order, and then we will kind of, I'm just going to go in numerical order, and then we'll kind of break down where we see him falling in and go over some of the stuff we've read and seen him kind of shake out. Cause right now it's all guessing where these guys are going to end up on the depth chart.
Yes.
But we have Patrick Smith, Jr., Chase Gillespie, sophomore, Dylan Betts-Pauley, Jr., Cedric Alexander, freshman, Diego Benson, freshman, A.J. Newberry, freshman, Isaiah Fontaine, sophomore. So there are a few names on there that stick out and are probably at the...
Did you say Dylan Betts-Pauley?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Sorry.
Yeah. He's number 25. He's the third one I read off there. I'm so sorry.
That totally went over my mind.
Yeah, there are a few guys that jump out. Tell me if I'm missing anybody. But Gillespie is probably the favorite to win the starting role. I would say number two is Patrick Smith. More than likely, Cedric Alexander, I've heard make a little bit of noise. But right now, Gillespie, I think, might be the guy in that room. I could be wrong.
Well, and here's the thing, too. I don't – and Jaden Everett, running back coach, tweeted out in response to close personal friend of the pod, Billy Derrick. He said straight up on Twitter, it is going to be a running back by committee. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there is a guy. I would love for, as the season progressed, to see that there be a guy. I think all Vanderbilt fans would like that. And I think if you sort of backed the running back coach into a corner and was like, gave him a truth serum, he'd be like, yeah, I would prefer there to be a guy. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, Chase Guop Gillespie. Maybe the best nickname on the entire team. I cannot wait. I cannot wait for him to rip off a big run. And just from Section F, row 44, yell, run, Guop, run. My dad is born in 1959. He's getting on up there. I can't wait to tell my dad, Dad, anytime he rips off a big run, we got to yell, run, Guop, run.
You should tell him about Patrick Smith's nickname. Cheeks. Run, Cheeks, run. Run,
Cheeks, run, baby.
But I think in my head, and I could be wrong, I think Gillespie and Patrick Smith will be taking 80%+ of the carries this season. Even if it is by committee, maybe Cedric Alexander breaks into that rotation heavier. That's the only guy that I could see breaking in heavier. I just think that Patrick Smith, now I'll read off the stats from last year. Obviously, you lost Ray Davis. Okay. He was your most productive offensive player. 232 carries, 1,042 yards, 4.5 yards per carry, 5 touchdowns. He also tacked on 29 catches for 169 yards and 3 touchdowns. Now, Patrick Smith struggled. He had a sophomore slump. 56 carries for 151 yards, 2.7 yards per carry, 1 touchdown. He also had 8 catches for 41 yards. Chase Gillespie had 27 carries for 118 yards, 1 catch for 8 yards. And then Rocco Griffin left the team early in the season there. Mm-hmm. He had, I believe, 9 carries for 86 yards.
But also got struck with the injury bug,
he
too.
Did. Yeah. Patrick Smith, though, was the guy going in. His freshman year, he had way better stats and looked way better than he did in that ugly number he had.
Oh, yeah.
Way better.
He's such a good number.
Everyone expected that he was the heir apparent and he was going to gain carries over Ray Davis as Ray was coming back from that injury he suffered in the 2021 season. And it just didn't happen. Gillespie kind of overtook him as the season went on. I believe he also was suspended early in the year for four games. That threw off his rhythm for the entire season. So Patrick Smith, I know that early in camp, whatever reports are coming out, that Gillespie might be kind of leading the pack, but it is going to be running back by committee. And I think Patrick Smith might be one of those guys that's an X factor for this offense. If he can get it going and do what we thought he would be doing in his third season in his junior year when we saw him as a freshman, and he can make some explosive plays at running back, he could be a game changer for this offense.
I'm glad you brought him up because, especially his freshman season, he had some special runs. Like you saw glimpses. We talk about the glimpses with AJ Swan. You saw glimpses in Cheeks his freshman year that you thought, oh, wow, this kid's got some juice. And yes, he did take a step back last year. I want to ask you this, and I believe I asked you this when we had Robbie on last week. Do you think, and I don't want to chalk this up to this being the sole reason he sort of had a slump. How much do you think that first four-game suspension, because first four-game suspension, that's already tough. His first game back was against Alabama at Bryant-Denny. That's a terrible game to come back and try and get some juju going. He came back after four games to a team that already sort of had a flow with Ray Davis as the guy. And so How much do you think that played into it? I want to get your opinion because I think I want to hear yours before I give my opinion.
So this is what you kind of beat me to my punch here. Ooh. I will say,
dude,
but God, I was pulling it up while you were making that point, the schedule from last year. So I made sure I didn't misquote it in the first four games. Those stats being given already for Patrick Smith, he did miss the only non-conference games of the entire season due to suspension.
I didn't even
think which are the games that Vanderbilt put up 63, 42, 25, and 38. Those are games that he would have padded that 2.7 yards per carry he had last year. So while he did have a down year, he didn't look great when he was out there. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say he looked spectacular, but he was facing his first three games back were number 2 Alabama, number 9 Ole Miss, and number 1 Georgia. That's a pretty tough first three games to get back into the rhythm and flow of things. I think he's going to look freakishly fast when he gets out on the field. And he's going up against Hawaii and Alabama A&M and Wake Forest and UNLV. I think all of a sudden you're going to say, whoa, who's this number 4 guy? Mm-hmm. He looks like an absolute game breaker. I think that's going to be because you've only seen him for the past 20 months play against SEC competition. Mm-hmm. You haven't even seen him against non-conference opponents.
And that's what excites me about him is in – and that's why I wanted to get your take, because I think we're on the same page with him, is being out those first four games, like you said, being, and I didn't even think about them being the only non-conference games. That's typically, which then again, poor scheduling on Vanderbilt's part, really not Vanderbilt's part, so Derek Mason's part. I don't know. Who cares? We won't talk about him. But those are sort of like games that you use to get into your rhythm. And he didn't like you said, that's great. He didn't have those games to get into a rhythm. He really was thrown into, I don't want to say a nightmare situation, but like you said, those first three games were a nightmare situation. Going up against that Alabama defense with Will Anderson and then going up against maybe in Georgia, maybe the greatest defense we've ever seen. That's a really, really tough spot to put a kid in. I think he's going to have a huge bounce back year. I'm the leader of the Cheeks fan club.
Now, Patrick Smith, I was a big proponent of him last year. He let me down. He let me down his sophomore season. I'm expecting a big jump, but he's not the guy that I think Vanderbilt fans are going to have their ears perked up by and be like, whoa, wait a second. This guy's making plays. He's the starting running back. I think that's going to be Chase Gillespie. He's number 13 this year. I think he's going to look much better in number 13 and not number 46.
Once again, great
that,
number.
That immediately makes players look better and more athletic. It's illogical, right. But it is so true. It doesn't matter if it's basketball and at the high school level. Now, there are some people that break this mold. If you're like a LeBron James and you're wearing like number 52 on the basketball court, you're still going to look incredible. But the average, normal, good player, the difference in wearing number 46 and wearing number 13 is the difference in looking like a superstar and looking like a scrub.
This is
but
total
Chase Gillespie,
logic, but it works.
It's not this. All this is bullshit. This is not real. Nothing I'm telling you is real, but take it as gospel. But Chase Gillespie is going to be the other X factor on this offense. We're going to hit on receiver next. That position is set. But Chase Gillespie and Patrick Smith, they could be home run hitters as a 1-2 duo. Am I overstepping there as them being one as home run hitters? Because Ray Davis's longest run last season was 24 yards.
So I don't disagree with you that they could be home run hitters. I think where I disagree with you is the guy who you said you're going to have your ears perked up for is Gillespie. For me, it's Cedric Alexander. He's the guy that I'm like, okay, Vanderbilt fans, we might have something here. Had a great spring game running behind. And I think, too, of course, we'll get into the offensive line. I don't want to jump too far ahead. These guys are running behind an experienced offensive line this year with really good depth. And God forbid injuries happen. Cedric Alexander really interests me. I think Chase Gillespie, though, I think he could. Now, where Vanderbilt is probably maybe lacking a little bit is in the pass catching whenever it comes to running backs. I don't even know if I could say lacking, just unproven.
I think Smith is actually going to fill that role pretty well. I think he was utilized decently heavily last year for the amount of snaps he actually got. He had 8 receptions. He only played in 8 total games.
How many yards did he have?
150. No, that's his rushing yards. I got to pull that back up now. You're killing me, Trevor, with these
numbers. I'm so sorry. I'm
pulling up like too many stats. My brain is all frazzled. Let me pull it up. 8 catches, 41 yards. Not great.
Okay, no.
And screen passes, dump offs, whatever. I think Patrick Smith has that ability. But yeah. Cedric Alexander, for people that aren't familiar, he is a freshman, former 3-star running back out of Texas. He also had offers. Let me pull up his offer sheet. My laptop is a Dell and a giant piece of garbage.
Everybody knows the real Texas boys play for Vanderbilt.
The real Texas boys do. His offer sheet was not the most impressive in the world. Offers from Air Force, Navy, Texas State, UTSA. But I'm going to read off his height and weight. 5'9", 200 pounds coming out of high school. That's a guy that can come in and contribute as a freshman. He's got the body type. He's got the weight. Needs to add a little bit of strength to get used to the speed of the game. But having a true freshman, that is a position that a true freshman can contribute at in the SEC is running back. So I'm really glad you brought up Cedric Alexander.
I see. For me, I would go, and like we said, it's so tough to make a prediction right now because everything is so fluid. We're only what this – We're 6 days into fall camp. I might be wrong. I don't know. It's a Friday night. It's late. We're being gritty right now. So we don't really know. And you know what? I'll say this right now. Go ahead and timestamp me. Go ahead and mark this in the podcast. I don't think the Vanderbilt running back room takes that big of a step back. That's my hot take. Yeah, you lost Ray Davis. I think collectively speaking, though, I don't think they take a huge step back. In fact, you'll be able to notice because it'll be running back by committee as opposed to one guy. I don't think it's going to be as bad as we think. Am I wrong?
I tend to very much side with, and this is not a popular opinion, with what's going on currently in the NFL with Jonathan Taylor and his dispute with Jim Irsay and the Colts franchise.
Yeah.
But I think running back is a position that, of course, there's a difference between the most talented running backs in the history of Vanderbilt and extremely talented guys in the NFL. But I think that's one of the positions that most heavily is reliant on how all the other positions are on the offense. And as long as that offensive line is opening up holes and you have a decently talented crew of running backs behind them that aren't just like me and you running out there in pads, and there are guys that still run sub 4.6s and are like 5'10", 200 pounds of muscle, that the difference between like a Ray Davis and a Patrick Smith and Chase Gillespie and Cedric Alexander being running back by committee versus Ray Davis, I don't think that's that much of a difference in offensive production versus like quarterback or receiver or what we're about to get into, tight end. So I think that those positions, individual guys truly are unique skill sets more. Versus running back, those are kind of once in a generation type unique skill sets.
And you want to talk about unique skill?
Ray Davis was not that guy.
I agree.
He was a
good player.
Yeah, I agree. And you want to talk about unique skill sets? Something that Vanderbilt is really going to need this year, especially with how thin we are at tight end, guys who are really good at pass protection. Me and Will were the other night, we were just going back and we were watching Vanderbilt games from last year. Guys, Patrick Smith is really good in pass pro.
At least in that game.
In the Florida game, he picked up a blitzing linebacker and stuffed him. It was impressive. And that wasn't just the one play. Like, we saw multiple times that he was really good in pass pro. It's not an intangible, but those sort of skill sets are going to keep maybe him on the field a little bit more than other guys, I think.
Moving on from running back, because we still have 3 position groups to get to. I don't even know how much time we're currently running at. Can you read that in top left corner?
We are running at 53 minutes.
53 minutes. So this should be a solid hour and a half, hour 40 episode. Next up, we have the most talented position group, in my humble opinion. And you could disagree when we get to the defensive breakdown, but the most talented group on this roster, and that's wide receiver. So I'm going to go through all of the guys at the wide receiver position here, and then we'll break down the key names. Quincy Skinner Jr., junior, Jaden McGowan, sophomore, Will Shepard, senior, Richie Hoskins, junior, Gamarion Carter, junior, Landon Wells, sophomore, Derek Key, freshman, Jackson Heise, freshman, Wilson Long, senior, Hutch Baird, junior, London Humphreys, freshman, Junior Sherrill, freshman, Davion Walker, sophomore, Ezra McAllister, junior, and Sean Naeem, graduate. There are only a few of those names that we'll really see getting too consistent of snaps, but the main three, the big three,
yep,
the three guys that everybody's focused on, every preview is focused on, is the first three names in the depth chart. If you sort by wide receiver, number three, Quincy Skinner Jr., at wide receiver, number two, number six, Jaden McGowan, number change, number 16 to number six for Jaden McGowan. Great. He's going to be playing that wide receiver three slot position. And then you have the man, number 14, Will motherfucking Shepard.
Yup.
Will Shepard.
Dog.
We talked about him early on, the plays he's been making. He is going to be the main focus of every single defense that Vanderbilt plays. You cannot guard him with one corner. I dare an SEC defense to try to guard him one-on-one in man. They are going to get burned every single time. Safeties are going to have to help over. And that is just going to open up stuff for Quincy Skinner Jr. at that wide receiver two and Jaden McGowan in the slot. Because secondly, Quincy Skinner Jr. is maybe half an inch down from Will Shepard. He's coming off a hamstring injury that he kind of suffered through and played through last year. He's never at full strength, really. He made the game-saving catch before the Will Shepard game-winning catch against Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Quincy Skinner Jr. is my guy that I think is going to have the biggest breakout year. I've been on him all offseason. This is my guy. But Jaden McGowan, very heavy contributor last year. I think he's going to contribute even more. You have to find ways to get the ball in the hands of Jaden McGowan in that slot, whether it's wide receiver screens, whether it's jet sweeps. He is a guy that has to have the ball in his hands. And those three guys are going to get 90% of the catches and touches out of those wide receiver positions.
I totally agree. And I think too, I'm right there with you on Q, on Quincy Skinner Jr. Offensively speaking, I think he might, and I'll give him the preseason, my breakout player prediction. The only reason people are like, oh, well, Will Shepard. Well, Will Shepard's not going to. He's broken out. Like, we know what we have with Will Shepard. Now, I say that now, and we're going to be like, oh, we know what we have. And he's going to have a sort of demigod season, which I love for that to happen. And I think it's probably going to. A healthy Quincy Skinner Jr. is going to be a sight to see just in the spring game, bro. If you were not at the Black and Gold game, he was a sight to see. He was awesome. He had a long catch, hit him with the Tyreek Hill deuces. It was absolutely electric. I think he's going to have a great season. Also, I don't want to say best friends because I don't know their relationship, but I've been told really good friends with AJ Swan. So maybe a little bit of a connection. I don't know.
The only other name on that list that I read off, we hit on the big three. The only other name on the list I read off that sticks out is Gamarion Carter. Number change down to 17. He has been posted a couple times. He was most recently posted on a highlight on a catch from Ken Seals. He was a small contributor last year. I have no idea what Trevor's trying to write down on this.
I'm so sorry.
What does that say?
Junior Sherrill. Yeah. That's
he will also contribute. That's a name I missed. Talk on Junior a little bit.
Dude, Junior, I think gonna play that slot position with Jaden McGowan. Definitely gonna back him up. Jaden has that spot on lockdown. Now before we get into Junior, Jaden with a little bit of greasy hands last year, put the ball on the ground a lot. I don't want to hate on the kid. I feel like he put the ball on the ground every single game. It felt like a lot.
Slippery hands.
But then again, I totally agree. Whenever you have a guy with that sort of speed, you have to give him the ball. I mean, and I would encourage, if you're listening to this, please tweet at us, message us. When was the last time Vanderbilt had a kid with this sort of speed?
I mean, it's pretty crazy to look at Jaden McGowan and say that he had 44 catches for 453 yards as a freshman. He was the second leading receiver on the team last year.
Double that. He's going to get close to 1,000.
I mean, you say he's going to get to 1,000. I think Will Shepard's going to get close to 1,000, and I think Quincy's going to do
Will's gonna
500 to 800. So, I mean, right there is a hell of a season from a wide receiving core.
Yes. And so I think specifically Junior Shirell, I think he really interests me this year because he's a talented kid at a Lipscomb Academy. Mm-hmm. I went and watched him play a couple of games in high school. He looks like the real deal. Speedster, great hands. I'm not sure what his weight is right now. In high school, he looked a little thin, but almost all kids in high school look a little thin. I'm sure they've beefed him up a little bit, but not too much because they want to preserve that sort of speed he's got. He really interests me. Vanderbilt has a lot of really good young receivers. Junior Shirell, London Humphreys. I tweeted this whenever he signed with us on National Signing Day. London Humphreys is going to be an all-SEC wide receiver one day. Bookmark it. The kid's got the stuff. But, and two, as we're staying on wide receivers, this is a fun little question I have for you. Is this wide receiver room better or has more upside than the 2012 J-Matt, Chris Boyd, Jonathan Krause?
Potentially. You said upside, so that adds a little bit of a shake up to that question. They could be. But Jonathan Krause, the biggest contribution that he had during the J-Matt, Chris Boyd era was he was such a good blocker on the edge on those wide receiver screens. I don't think that's going to be Jaden McGowan's game. Too small is going to be a playmaker. I think they could be, but I'm also not going to say that they are better than the best wide receiving group in the history of Vanderbilt football until they've actually gone out and done it.
Do you think there's more depth? 1 to 3. There sure as hell more depth 1 to 5.
I'm not going to say more. I'm going to say this better? Year. This year is the closest. This year is the most similar to that year that we've ever seen.
Jaden McGowan is better than Jonathan Krause. Jaden's not really a number three guy, but Jaden is better than
I don't want to say Krause. Better. I don't like that language. Just because I think it's hard to compare. Because the numbers,
it's apples to oranges.
The numbers are going to be different. The numbers are going to be different. I don't know. That's too tough. Well, I can answer that better after I see a few games.
Well, I mean, too, here, the fact that we're even having this discussion is quite frankly insane to me. This is going to be a very, and I think, too, what's going to be so refreshing from a fan standpoint is Has Vanderbilt ever really been a pass-first offense? I don't even feel like they were really a pass-first offense during the Kyle Shurmur years. It was they're still going to run a more balanced West Coast-style offense. That's what Clark Lee
That 2012 team was probably the closest thing you had to it.
I see in the wide receiver room right now is so deep, and I think you have guys who have really good top-end speed that I'm interested to see the sort of offensive scheme of Vanderbilt goes 4 wide, goes 5 wide. You put then again with the tight end situation, wouldn't be a tight end situation with a 5 wide, but do you trust your offensive line enough to go out and put Swan in the backfield by himself, shotgun, go 5 wide and say, try and cover all these guys? You know what I mean? I think this wide receiver room can cause so much problems, so many problems for a defense. Even if Will Shepard has an off game, that's going to open up the spot for Quincy. That's going to open up the spot for Jaden. I mean, who the hell on a defense is going to cover Jaden in the slot?
That's the question, because you have to have so much attention focused on Will Shepard. And then you can't just ignore the fact that you have another explosive playmaker in Quincy Skinner Jr. on the other side. And then Jaden McGowan can just get lost getting picked up in single coverage by a backer or safety.
That's what I'm saying.
No backer or safety in any team can cover Jaden McGowan.
I absolutely agree. And that's my, this wide receiver room produces so many mismatch problems. And here's the beautiful thing about it. Even if Will Shepard is covered, he's still open. Like Ocho Cinco said, my guy is 7'11". You put two guys on him, throw it up to him, and just give him a chance. And that's the beautiful thing about this wide receiver room right now, is your top guy is that guy.
Now that the vibes are riding extremely high, okay, it's time to get into a position that does not have extreme depth and is going to cause the offensive scheme to get creative. I would say you're going to see some formations that might make you say, what the hell? I've never seen Vanderbilt come out in this. And it's because Vanderbilt simply has no depth at tight end. But before we get to that, Trevor, it's time for the cocktail hour.
I was about to beg for one.
It's time to take a little break, Ski, put a little pause on this recording, and go grab yourself a cold.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And we're back, Trevor. Feeling better? Feeling great? Oh, feeling good? Better. All right. Into a position that will not make you feel very good, and that is tight end. So I'm going to read through the limited number of tight ends currently on the roster, going from top to bottom, numerical order again. Crack open that Diet Coke.
I know, sorry.
We got Cole Spence, injured. Logan Kyle, injured. Cameron Johnson, Chris Boyle, Justin Ball, and Josh Palmer. So I started off by at the top, kind of leaking messing up that headline just a little bit. But Cole Spence, supposed to be tight end number one, out for the year with an ACL injury. Logan Kyle, senior tight end, formerly a wide receiver, recovering from a hand injury. And then Justin Ball, graduate, veteran in the program, but a lot of question marks. You had Gavin Schoenwald and Ben Bresnahan from last year's team that were huge contributors, kind of under the radar, assisted that offensive line. This is the reason why people have offensive line concerns. I don't think it's really as much the offensive line. It's more how much of the offensive line was the grease gang, no hate on them, and how much was it they basically had two additional offensive linemen in a lot of those sets, and Gavin Schoenwald and Ben Bresnahan. So you have a huge gap left by those two guys lost to graduation. Who's going to fill that gap? Right now, it's Justin Ball and question marks.
I don't even know if it's Justin Ball and question marks. I think it's probably question mark and question mark. With that being said, we know who the number one and the number two guys are going to be as of right now. We know the number one is going to be Justin Ball. The number two probably going to be Cameron Johnson, the young freshman. Dude, this would be a great time to have Kamarion Pimpton.
Yeah,
until the douchebag Brian Kelly stole him from us. So thanks, brother. But dude, it makes me sad even kind of thinking about it, because we prep for these podcasts pretty hard. Like, we like do our research, like we game plan, we have meetings about this stuff. Be like, okay, what are we gonna say? Here's the order of things, and then we get to tight end, and we're just like, dude, we don't know.
I mean, you're gonna have to have guys step up that have never done it in actual game. I mean, Justin Ball last year, 5 catches, 67 yards. That's the coming back production on this roster, 5 catches for 67 yards. That doesn't even take into account blocking. You basically cannot have two tight end sets. You're not going to see traditional two tight end sets this year.
That would so limit your offense.
Because even Cameron Johnson, even Logan Kyle, that are probably going to be your two and three in that tight end position, they are not traditional three down tight ends that also split out. They're guys that split out that can also come in and be three down guys. So We don't have any answers. I don't have any answers. It's going to be a rough year at tight end, and they're just going to have to scheme the entire offense around the lack of depth and lack of talent they have at the tight end position.
And here's the thing, too, and we've said it on previous pods. The offensive production that you're losing from the tight end, yeah, you are losing some, but that's not the big concern, because the offensive production that you do lose at tight end, you double it at wide receiver. But like Will said, it's the blocking. I don't know what you're going to do with the blocking. I think you're going to have to really rely on your running backs in the pass protection game. Can Justin Ball be a good blocker? I hope he can. Can Kamarion Johnson or Cameron Johnson? We don't know. We haven't seen the kid play.
He's a freshman.
Yeah.
That's not a tight end is not one of the positions that you normally see freshmen contribute in the SEC. So instead of us hearing us ramble on about a position that really we don't have any answers to, I think we can make the tight end recap pretty quick and move on to offensive line where there's a little more depth and discussion to be had.
Yeah, the tight end recap is we legitimately don't know.
That is the black box. That is the burning star of this offense. There aren't any answers. That's the part that, like, I want to have gold colored glasses right now, but I can't see that position not being a detriment to this offense.
Do you think they maybe use the fullback sort of in those?
I mean, they don't really have fullbacks. But, they have one freshman walk on.
That's the kid that I'm talking about, the Clark Lee brought up at SEC Media Days. I know it's only one. I know it's a PWO fullback. Is that maybe a guy you throw out there? Or are we going to see two running back sets?
I just think you're going to see more spread out stuff. I mean, and you're just going to hope that the grease gang, this offensive line, can take that step forward that everybody's expecting. I mean, you're hearing a lot of things on the board about it, but I don't think they're having those same discussions in the actual film room with the offensive line about, guys, we're going to be a little bit down because we don't have the tight end. So I think they're just going to be scheming, saying this offensive line has to produce. We're not going to have two tight end sets anymore. We can have one tight end sets. He can assist in pass pro. But this offensive line just has to take the step forward that we expect it to with all the returning talent.
So I'll ask you this about the tight ends. Whenever Vanderbilt unfortunately lost Cole Spence, do you think the talking point was, oh, we just lost an offensive production weapon, or we just lost a really good blocker? Because I think, and maybe I read the room wrong, maybe I had the wrong vibe. I thought we were of the opinion of, oh, we just lost a potential really good offensive weapon, and blocking wasn't really a consideration. Am I wrong?
I mean, I think regardless, the tight end position, even without the Cole Spence injury, was already the thinnest position on the offense. And it was already,
okay. Yeah, it,
before the injury ever happened, we were going to be having the same discussion. Now it's like DEFCON 5, because you've had an injury to one of your two guys that were theoretically returning and theoretically going to be your two tight ends. We're going to be Justin Ball and Cole Spence. And now you lose one of them from an already unproven group. So I don't think we have too much to add.
Well, the big blow, I hate to minimize the Cole Spence injury, and speediest of recoveries to that kid. ACL injuries suck. Hope he comes back better than ever. But one of the big blows that we're not talking about is the Kamarion Pimpton decommitment on National Signing Day, whenever you had a stud tight end coming that nobody else really wanted. And then all of a sudden, all of these teams realize, like, oh, Barton Simmons actually knows what he's doing and he's really good at this. If Barton Simmons likes this kid, maybe we should like this kid. So literally in the 12th hour, you have Texas come out, you have LSU come out and legitimately stole Kamarion Pimpton with what, an hour left in National Signing Day?
This would be a lot less the world is falling if you had him coming in.
There would be no world is falling.
Him. Which to me is Pimpton got some bad advice, I don't want to say suckered into a larger program like LSU, but you would have been on the field day one for an SEC program.
Yes.
Schemed into the offense. It that felt like a last second trick, old school signing day, flip them day of
classic.
A classic. But I want to get to the offensive line because we're already an hour 20 here. And I know you're going to have some stuff to say about the OL here.
Love the big boys.
I want to run through all these guys. I'll give them their due. Offensive line doesn't get good enough. So I'll run through the same way I did previously at all the other positions. So starting at the top, Bradley Ashmore, senior. Kevo Wesley, senior. Gunnar Hansen, junior. Jake Keshick, junior. Leighton Nelson, sophomore. Duncan McDonald, sophomore. Trent Weaver, senior. Julian Hernandez, graduate senior. Delphin Xavier Castillo, junior. Anthony Miles, freshman. Barrett Maddox, freshman. Cooper Starks, freshman. David Siegel, sophomore. Gage Pitchford, junior. Levi Harbor, sophomore. Charlie Clark, junior. Misael Sandoval, freshman. Grayson Morgan, sophomore. Junior Azebu, graduate senior. And then Keegan Weschler, freshman. Ran through all of them, Trevor.
Shout out to the Grease Gang. Dude, I love those guys. The most underappreciated guys in all of sports.
So this is where the offense makes or breaks every year for Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt doesn't have to have a top of the SEC offensive line. Vanderbilt more than likely will never have a top three, top five SEC offensive line like they potentially can at every other position. But if Vanderbilt can just have the offensive line be kind of like their facilities and just get them to a point that it's not a detriment to the team. The offensive line, if Vanderbilt's offensive line can be middle of the pack in the SEC, that is the greatest offensive line in the history of Vanderbilt football. And I think that this year, I'm not saying it's going to be, but has potential to be one of the best offensive lines that we've seen.
I think this could be the best offensive line that Vanderbilt has seen in a very, very long time. Since the Bruno Reagan, Kyle Shermer era, I have incredibly high expectations for this offensive line. Really, going into last season, the offensive line was very thin, a lot of question marks. I think most Vanderbilt fans would agree, they sort of overachieved. They kind of beat out our expectations that we had of them last year. They had some really, really good games. Of course, you had some young guys, particularly Gunnar Hansen on the edge, he put in a tough position, especially that Alabama game, one-on-one going up against Will Anderson. I mean, I trusted 5-year seniors going to lose that battle probably 8 out of 10 times. It just is what it is. I think this Vanderbilt offensive line is going to be very, very, very strong this year. I'm incredibly excited about the Grease Gang. Coach Blazik. I always mispronounce his name. Is it Blazik?
AJ Blazik.
AJ Blazik. I'm going to just call him Coach Blaze because I always mispronounce his name. Love that guy. I think we're going to have a huge, huge, huge season from the offensive line. Whenever you have guys come back, like Julian Hernandez, your starting center, come back, want to play for the program, that's a lot of experience and a lot of shared games that you have on this offensive line. I'm really, really excited about it. And I guess we can start at left tackle. My guy, Gunnar Hansen.
Gunnar Hansen.
He has that sort of grit and that sort of edge and that, like, kind of piss and vinegar venom that you love to see in your offensive lineman that Vanderbilt really has never had. Like one of my favorite.
Bruno Reagan.
Bruno, big dog Bruno. Shout out close personal friend of the pod. We absolutely love that guy. But dude, Gunner, he gets after it. He's a dog on the edge. He's awesome. I love that guy. I think he's going to have a great, great season. I love watching his Instagram because he always posts those workout clips in the summer, and I just love watching offensive linemen do drills. I legitimately think it's the most fascinating thing in football, like watching them do the drills. I think it's the coolest thing ever.
And he also needed to put on a little weight.
He's a big boy.
And I think the offseason is going to do him a lot of favors as far as just getting stronger. He's got the frame, but he's got to put on the weight to be an SEC left out.
Well, and I believe he put on a good chunk of weight this offseason. Vanderbilt, there was a tweet that came out a couple months ago that Vanderbilt has the third heaviest offensive line in the nation. In the nation. I think Vanderbilt's total offensive line averages like 152 pounds. Those are big boys. Now, sometimes can it work against you? Sometimes can you get too big? Yeah, you get a little bit too big. Well, I think sometimes you can get a little too big to where it's hard for you to come out of your stance. You lose a little bit of speed. It's hard for you to get the bends. But I'm not going to complain about this. Vanderbilt has never had size on the offensive line. And Vanderbilt has a legitimate, huge offensive line this year with a ton of guys who have played games together, guys who have played at different positions. They know how the offensive line works. They know how the schemes work, how the protections work. I think that this is going to be an absolutely masterclass year from the offensive line.
Yeah, and we're not going to go through each of the individual depth chart offensive line positions because I don't want to break anything behind a paywall here for these guessing depth charts. But the interior of that offensive line should be pretty consistent from what it was last year. You talked about the center there with Julian Hernandez returning.
Yes.
So this is always my pop quiz. What do you think the second most important position and biggest swing of gambling lines is
created? Oh, I know this.
If it's not quarterback, it's center.
Center, yep.
Center's about worth – center in a betting line, gambling line, is worth like 3 to 4 points because that is the quarterback of the offensive line. And having an experienced center returning as a graduate senior is something that it got attention in the offseason, as it should have, but I don't think it got enough attention. Totally having agree. Julian Hernandez back to kind of cement that offensive line and cement the Grease Gang into what they are alongside Xavier Castillo is probably going to be one of those interior guys starting, and the Bradley Ashmore at the right guard spot that we're kind of expecting to play there. I think.
Probably Bradley Ashmore is the best offensive lineman out of the five, just from a talent aspect. I think Bradley Ashmore has played four of the five positions. I could be very wrong, but just talking about Julian Hernandez, is he the best center in the SEC? No, he's not. But just having a guy come back like that who has played that many games, who knows the offense that well, who knows the guys to his left and his right that well, sort of like Ken Seals, even though Ken Seals isn't going to be starting, is a huge addition to that offensive line. I don't think whenever Julian said he announced that he was coming back, I truly don't believe he got enough hype. He should have gotten more hype as he said. That was a huge, huge addition to this offensive line at the center position.
At the center position. Now, the only guy that we haven't really touched on that's probably going to be a starter, he started a lot of games last year's junior, is Ebu. And he's been hit or miss. He struggled just a little bit, but I don't think he gave up too many sacks. I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but I don't think he gave up too many sacks last year. A lot of that was because of the blocking schemes, always having Bresnahan or Schoenwald there to assist at that left tackle spot. But he's probably going to be the guy at that left tackle position as a redshirt senior. He's got experience. He's got the size, but he's just struggled a little bit. He's not an NFL prospect, I don't think, by any stretch of the imagination. So that left tackle position could be a spot that could cause some issues for the Commodores. And as we know, the left tackle in the offensive line is not important at all. Like, just forget about it. Doesn't matter at all, Lawrence Taylor.
Cares about blocking quarterback's blind side? No. Nobody.
There wasn't a movie about it with Sandra Bullock.
Oh, yeah. Terrible football film.
You don't like The Blind Side?
No, so bad. One of the worst sports movies ever made. Very bad movie. Very, very bad. If you're not watching the pod right now, Will is giving me a death stare. I'll stand by this. The Blind Side is not a good movie.
Just so everyone knows, he's shitting on The Blind Side, but he's never watched Friday Night Lights.
That is true. I did get a lot of...
So
I got
don't
a,
listen to anything he said.
I got a lot of, not hate on Twitter, but multiple people were like DMing me, tweeting me, texting me, be like, yo, what the hell? You've never watched Friday Night Lights?
Deservedly so.
We should watch Friday Night Lights
the
together.
Best, yes. The best football TV show of all time.
It's just not good. But like you said, those tackle positions on the edge, incredibly important. Now, Junior, former West Virginia guy, I believe West Virginia transfer. How do I phrase this, guys? Not a weak link of the offensive line, but maybe one of the weaker. And we say that in regards to a very strong offensive line. I think, like, I'm hyping this offensive lineup a ton.
I think Trevor's a little bit, I'm high on the offensive line. I think Trevor's a little bit higher on the offensive line than I am. I think they're going to do very well, but I think, just like I said with AJ Swan, not that I don't have high expectations, but just I'm giving the suggestion of temper them down a tad.
See, and so I've seen a lot of people say that. Why do you think that?
For the reasons that, I mean, they did improve last year. I'm not an offensive line expert. I didn't play offensive line. I graduated high school at 145 pounds. But from watching it last year, my logic tells me that there's no way that there's not going to be some growing pains losing Ben Bresnahan and Gavin Schoenwald. And Ray Davis was a hell of a blocker in the passing game, allowing a little bit extra pass protection.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. All right. That's a fair take. With that being said, I think just having that group of guys return and having that much depth, I don't want to say, well, I will say, I think it kind of does minimize the loss that we suffered from tight end and running back whenever it comes to pass protection. With that being said, I could be very, very wrong, and I hope I'm not, but I think this offensive line, I'll say this, I expect the offensive line to pick up the load. I expect them at this point in time, I expect them to pick up that load that you lost from tight end and running back.
But I think overall, as we attempt to close out this very beefy offensive preview episode 229, overall, I think we both expect the offense, and this is easy, I'm sure every fan podcast on the planet is saying this, but I think we both expect the offense to take a step forward.
Two steps.
This season, two steps forward even this season. You have a lot of returning talent at key spots. You've lost a little bit of talent, but I think the returning talent and new talent coming in exceeds what you've lost. So I think this offense will look better this year. It's the third year in the system. Clark Lee's finally kind of getting his feet under him, knows what to look for. He's not going to come out with a horrific game plan as a coaching staff like against ETSU in game one. And I think that it's reasonable to say Vanderbilt fans should expect this offense to look a lot better and a lot more consistent this season.
Well, I'll say this too. When breaking down the offensive preview, we specifically broke down players. Vanderbilt didn't lose any coaching staff from the offense. So you're going to have not just continuity amongst the players, you're going to have continuity amongst the coaching staff, which is just as important, maybe a little bit more important, some would say. So I think that's a huge addition. And I think too, with the experience that Vanderbilt has and with the talent upgrade, it sort of opens up the playbook, not sort of, it definitely opens up the playbook more than what you had with Mike Wright at quarterback, especially in the passing game.
I mean, Mike Wright's arm just was not an SEC football quarterback arm.
It
was not a Power 5 arm. He had the leadership. He has the leadership qualities of an SEC quarterback. He has the personality of an SEC quarterback. He has the legs that are better than an SEC quarterback. He has every single thing you want and a quarterback. He's great in interviews. He's a very smart guy, you can tell, but he just can't throw a football. Like, if you could just give him 10% of Joe Milton's arm and add that into Mike Wright's arm, I think he could have been a lot more productive for Vanderbilt. But he's not currently on the roster. He's not coming through the door. AJ Swan. So let's run through the best guys at each position, and then I'll close it out here at quarterback AJ Swan. Running back, Chase Gillespie, Patrick Smith, Cedric Alexander, wide receiver, Will Shepard, Quincy Skinner Jr., Jaden McGowan. At tight end, Justin Ball and question mark. And at offensive line, I hope I don't forget any of these names on offensive line. Trevor, are you going to help me out?
Dude,
Junior Azebu. Bradley Ashmore, Gage Pitchford, Julian Hernandez, Grayson Morgan, Xavier Castillo, and Gunnar Hansen, maybe a little bit of Leighton Nelson. So for everyone listening out there, thank you from myself, Will Byram, and my co-host, Trevor Hoolan. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Door Report, episode 229. Anchor down, grab a cold one. It's going to be a hell of a season.